for the right, without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this, that one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable stars.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is David Duke on the Rents Radio Network, reaching out to the entire world with thousands and thousands and thousands of live links, every program, as well as many hundreds of independent radio stations all over the world broadcasting this program over the airwaves. We're reaching a lot of people. And the reason why this program is growing so rapidly and so powerfully is that this program and this network truly is devoted to the preservation of human diversity. And now that's real human diversity. It's not the diversity that they're trying to create in terms of this incredibly conflicted societies with massive immigration. It's a diversity that every form of life on this planet, whether we call it biodiversity in terms of the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom, or whether you call it the diversity of mankind, we believe that every people has the right to preserve their expression of humanity, its heritage and culture, and that every people has the right to rule themselves and the right to be free and independent. Human freedom is the principle that all peoples must be free to be different, because humanity, my friends, is not one. It is many. And destroying the variety and diversity and freedom of a diverse humanity is a destruction of humanity itself. And not recognizing the inborn urge of every people to express their essence in their own forms of art and music and culture and religion, societal structure and government leads to human conflict and often to violence and human suffering on a horrific scale. Much of the world's conflict is not because peoples and cultures are different. It's because they're not allowed to be different. Because globalists and imperialists seek to expand their empires. They want to control the resources and the economy of other nations, and they want to destroy real human diversity, real human freedom and independence. They want to control how much the money is worth in your pocket, whether you're in America or Canada or Europe or the Middle East or China for that matter. They want to control what movies you see. They want to control what music you listen to. They want to control what junk food you eat to destroy your health. They are the new imperialists, and they are imperialists, I hate to say it, of a new racial supremacism, or at least a biological or ethno-supremacism. That might be a more accurate way to put it. And that's what's so amazing about this whole process. The same forces that are supporting the state of Israel are the same forces behind so-called globalism. But uniquely, they have a different standard for the conduct of Israel than they do for every other nation in which they dwell. Today I'm going to have with me a fantastic individual. I call him Dr. Gerhard Rudolph because he completed his doctoral requirements, by all means. He did his thesis, a brilliant student, an incredible man of courage. I love the theme song of today's opening program. You know, one man covered with scars. This man is covered with scars because he stood up. He stood up and told what he believed to be the truth. It's not important, really, and there is an importance to it. It's not important whether you agree with that truth or I agree with the truth, but he stood up and went to prison for simply daring to have a different view of certain historical events. And that's courage. He suffered separation from his family. He suffered imprisonment. He has suffered financially, horribly, because of his incredible courage, and he's a man, one of the men I most respect in the world, and I'm happy to have him here because he is a human rights advocate in a real sense. Before I bring him on and we go to him, I want to give you my latest news item today. Jewish supremacists, if you look at davidduke.com, Jewish supremacists push mixed marriages for everyone except Jews. Now, that's interesting. Now, these, of course, are certain extremist Jews, but not all Jews have these opinions, obviously. But we're talking about certain extremist Jews who have a lot of power in the Jewish community and, in fact, in the worldwide community. Jewish supremacist organizations are the first to attack any group, such as European Americans or Nation of Islam or any group around the world who support diversity, human diversity, and the maintenance of individual cultures and peoples around the world. Yet the largest Jewish organization in the world, and that's according to Wikipedia and many other Jewish organizations, they have headquarters in practically every city, major city of the world, including places like Beijing, China, and many other places around the world. They have whole websites, books, and outreach groups devoted to ensuring that Jews only marry Jews. On its website, Chabad claims to be, quote, the most dynamic force in Jewish life today. Now, one of the most recent displays of Jewish supremacist hypocrisy is an article by Rabbi Eliezer Shemtov, and he's a Chabad Lubavitch emissary in Montevideo, Hungary, and a contributor to the main Chabad website, Chabad.org, so he's one of their leading people. He's got a book called Dear Rabbi, Why Can't I Marry Her? A Dialogue on Intermarriage. And in this, he explains that if a Jew marries a non-Jew, that they are going against God, that the Jews are a special people ordained by God for a particular mission, and so a Jew must not marry a non-Jew. Now, he has a little bit of deceit, and they seem to carry a lot of deceit with them, these extremists, because he talks to basically a Gentile, and he says that, well, this is really, you know, this isn't racism. It's really about, you know, faith and religion. But that's not true, because Chabad has shown in Jewish law, which they have a lot of say-so in Israel about it, and the Orthodox Jewish faith has a lot of say-so in Jewish law in Israel. Jewish law is not concerned about whether a Jew is a religious Jew or has, quote, the Jewish faith or not. They're only concerned about their heritage. A religious Jew is perfectly permitted to marry a non-religious Jew in Israel. A non-religious Jew is permitted to come from any nation of the world if he can show Jewish descent, Jewish heritage to Israel. In the Jewish religion and the Jewish nation of Israel, what they call the priest class, or the special effective Jews, they literally can't marry a Jewish person of the Jewish religion who has a single Gentile ancestor. So it's really a misnomer. It's really not about faith. They try to disguise what they do. It's really about blood and heritage and the ethnic aspects of it. Now, Chabad, this organization that has this position where they say you shouldn't marry and you can't marry a Gentile, a non-Jew, a Christian, in other words, these people actually are able to meet with, and often they have even offices in some of the leading politicos of the world. They literally have a little office in the White House of the United States, and they do teach-ins in the White House of the United States for fellow Jews to how about their Jewish conduct. And by the way, that conduct is to put Jewish interests first and the Jewish people first. And so, in fact, we've got a picture of Obama with another Chabad leader, Shemtov, same name. You know, different lineage, but the same common Jewish lineage, named Shemtov. And there's no problem. And notice that there's no difficulty. You can imagine Obama meeting with any person of any other group, any a European or American or Canadian or Australian head of a group who said that we will not allow and we do not permit and we are totally opposed to the marriage of a Christian to a Jew. That person wouldn't even get inside the doors of the White House. But they're honored by the White House, and they light a huge menorah in front of the White House every year. So the hypocrisy is enormous. And what I suggest to you is that when people counter some of the myths and some of the power of the Jewish extremists who really dominate so much in the media and governments of the world, they get attacked viciously, and they are often persecuted intensely. And it's not just about what they're talking about. It's the fact that they don't allow people to really challenge these viewpoints that they're trying to present to the world with their Zionist globalist perspective. So I'm going to bring on now the man that the man of the hour, and I call him Dr. Gamma Rudolph because he really is a doctor, and maybe someday he'll be able to complete that. Maybe when we have a change of politics in Europe and America. But Dr. Rudolph, it's great to have you with us, and it's really an honor for us to have you on the program to share to our audience your thoughts and ideas and a little bit of your history and what you're up to now in your life. Glad to have you here.
Thank you for having me on your show. And you know, I have to say something about you calling me a doctor, because legally speaking, I am not allowed to call myself a doctor because I don't have the degree. Therefore, I have to say that.
I agree. I appreciate you do saying that, because you're a very honest man and you've always been very clear. But I'm just saying I call you that because, you know, I look at your thesis. You're a scientist and you really did earn it. But apparently it was a political issues that prevented you from getting the degree that you earned. So maybe they don't consider you a doctor in terms of the formal world that they control. But as far as we're concerned, you have that accreditation as far as I'm concerned. And I realize that you can't say you're a doctor and you don't say you're a doctor, but I consider you such just because of the wonderful work that you've done. And because you did complete the requirements.
You have read it maybe on my website. I've posted my PhD thesis just a week ago or so and managed to put it online. And in the introduction to the posting, I wrote, well, basically at that time I wrote two theses that are worth, in a normal word, both of a PhD title. The one was my official one on theoretical crystallography, an ivory tower topic that nobody really is interested in, and the unofficial one, which concerned forensic studies on the Auschwitz concentration camp. Mm-hmm. And both kind of nixed each other. So I did two studies at the same time, finished both studies, and they both annihilated each other. Well, I wouldn't say the one actually got through, the other one got destroyed. Anyway, okay.
And then what was the mechanism they used to deny the doctorate that you really have earned?
Well, there is a law in Germany that was enacted in 1939 by a certain Mr. Hitler that says that academic degrees can be denied or revoked in case of lack of academic dignity. Now, that's a very broad term. Fact is, first of all, the law is still on the books. It's still being applied. And the interpretation of it is that there is a link today in Germany. If you have been sentenced to a prison term of a year or more, and involved in it is in that crime, you used your academic credentials to commit that crime, then your academic degree can be revoked or denied, in my case denied because I wasn't quite there yet, because you used your academic credentials to commit a crime. And that's basically what they did. I did that forensic research on Auschwitz, which came to conclusions which are dogmatically outlawed in Germany. So that means dogmatically in terms of you're not allowed to present evidence to the contrary in front of the court.
So you were denied, you know, the doctor that you really worked hard, you fulfilled all academic requirements, you did your thesis, you were denied your doctorate simply because you dared to have a different opinion and offered an historical opinion, and even a scientific evaluation, which of course they couldn't show was in any way wrong or not scientifically correct. Is that right? You were actually in physics at the time. Is that correct? Or chemistry?
Yeah, they were interdisciplinary between chemistry and physics, and of course I used my knowledge to do this forensic research. And it's not about proving whether it is correct or not correct. You know, it has happened numerous times. It happens over and over again that scientists are shown to have been wrong with their thesis. That's not because of that they get their title revoked. Right. People can err. That's not a reason. The reason why they denied it me the PhD title is simply because I had been sentenced in court, and the court said I used my knowledge in chemistry and physics to commit that crime. And I was, during that trial for my forensic research, I was not allowed to present any evidence to show whether or not my research is correct. So the German courts of law don't discuss the matter. As a matter of fact, nowadays it is illegal to raise any questions of the matter of such a crime in court.
So unbelievable. Unbelievable. 1984 is here, isn't it? I mean, it's just...
Yeah. If you file a motion to introduce evidence to show that your dissenting views on history on that particular chapter are correct, then you commit the crime in the courtroom once again because you dare to deny what is officially ordained as truth. I mean, you're not allowed to do that. Not even a lawyer who tries to file such a motion, he gets indicted for attempting.
So the lawyer, in trying to say that you were telling, you know, you were saying truthfulness, that you and you weren't trying to evoke any sort of hatred, which you weren't, obviously. You just were trying to set the historical record to be accurate from your point of view. Even the lawyer can be sent to prison.
Yes, lawyers have been sentenced in Germany ever since, I think the first case was in 1996, and ever since there have been a number of cases where lawyers have been sentenced to prison terms, either on probation or actually there are two lawyers right now sitting in prison. No, one of them got out by now for similar crimes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So trying to defend a client in court in such cases is a hazardous activity. So as a lawyer, you better tote the party line there, or else you get yourself in trouble.
Well, Mr. Rudolph, how do these tyrants in this area, how do they get away with this? I mean, you know, we criticize freedom of speech and political, you know, suppression of speech in China and other nations, Sudan or wherever, and we criticize them. In fact, we even want to go to war against them. That was one of the reasons they claimed to want to go to war against Muammar Gaddafi. Because he was suppressing people or whatever. They're doing the same thing in other countries. And then here you are, an intellect, academic. You're not doing anything inflammatory. You're just taking an historical period. You're doing a scientific analysis. And they're trying to throw you in jail. In fact, they ultimately did throw you in jail. And let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, my God, you have rapists and murderers serve less time in prison than what you got simply for having an opinion about an historical period. If that's not freedom of speech, then what it is? Tell us about the persecutions that you went under and a little bit of those details. I think our audience would like to hear and like to understand how much you did suffer simply for voicing your conscience.
Well, it all started in 1991, I think. I had written a letter to the editors of a small monthly newspaper. I got published, and as a consequence, because I had my name on that letter, of course, and the town where I lived, and I was listed in the phone books, I got contacted by people. One of them was a lawyer, and he wanted me to write an expert report on the matter of Auschwitz, whether or not it can be proven forensically that human gassings took place in the places where they are claimed to have taken place. Mm-hmm. And I had an interest in the topic. At that time, I was working on my PhD thesis, but I was looking for some real challenges that were a little bit more exciting. And I took the opportunity to do it and ended up being presented as an expert witness, I think, in 8 court cases in Germany in the years from 92 to 94. In each case, the court rejected the evidence. As I said before, it is illegal in Germany to present evidence to the contrary of what the prosecution says. So it was kind of an exercise in vain from a legal point of view, but of course I wasn't interested in the court case. I was interested in the scientific issue, and I had myself so many questions I wanted them answered, and I was in the position of doing some research, so I did it. I ended up between a rock and a hard place when one of the defendants that I appeared as an expert witness for finally published my research results. I was holding back on that research on Auschwitz because I knew it's going to be extremely controversial and might get me in hot water. And I wanted to get my PhD title first. But then my PhD supervisor was dragging his feet with correcting my thesis. So at the end, everybody was impatient and the thing got published prematurely with my consent because I was sick of it all too. What I did not consent to was that a preface and an epilogue was added to it, which I didn't know at the time. And at the end, I ended up in court being tried for my expert report not for the expert report itself. As a matter of fact, they could get around the question of whether it's correct or not, or whether it's scientific or not, but because a non-scientific preface had been added to it in an epilogue, they deemed the whole thing unscientific, and because there were some polemics in there, that was considered inflammatory, inciting of hatred, inciting of the masses, blah, 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 and ended up being sentenced to 14 months in prison. And the whole case was attracted media attention, so there were media reports about it. I made it in the newspapers. I made it in the daily news TV shows, unfortunately in a very negative way, which ended to my losing job, to being fired by my landlords, to being thrown out of all sorts of clubs and associations.
Well, Mr. Rudolph, we're going to come back with you in a moment after this commercial break, and very interesting, and we're going to continue on, ladies and gentlemen, with this one man's struggle for freedom of speech and freedom of conscience. It's an age-old struggle, ladies and gentlemen, and only the bravest and the most courageous men will stand up to that kind of pressure of prison and not back down and continue to fight. We'll be back with Gemma Rudolph right after these words.
Peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest, and the world will be better for this, that one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable stars.
Are you suffering from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeats, clogged arteries? If so, you are not alone. Millions of people are suffering from one or more of these problems. If you'd like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then this might be the most important message you'll ever hear. An effective 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available. Heart and Body Extract is an exclusive formula of wild-crafted and organic herbs. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Get your Heart and Body Extract today by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305, or heartandbody.com.
If you're taking 1, 2, 5 or more nutritional supplements, please stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food supplement you can buy. Men, women, children, even Olympic athletes the world over have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com and now take just one nutritional supplement instead of many. The Bio Superfood formulas are whole food products composed with four of the most nutrient-dense algae found on Earth. Bio Superfood for the brain helps with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. If you can increase brain health, the rest of the body is a no-brainer. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity and is safe for you and your family. Learn more and order your Bio Superfood formulas at BioAge.com, spelled BioAge.com, BioAge.com, or call 877-288-9116. That's 877-288-9116. BioAge, the age of advanced organics.
Let's keep on looking for the light. Oh, can't you see the morning after? It's waiting right outside the storm. Why don't we cross the bridge together and find the place that's safe? It's not too late. We should be giving.
ladies and gentlemen. This is David Duke on the Rinse Radio Network. Remember, this program is on archives from 5 or 10 minutes after this show. You can send the links to your friends and relatives anywhere in the world, and they can listen to this broadcast. And we have a lot of listeners all over the world, and I'm really thankful for that. And we are really growing like crazy, partly because just about every program we have somebody from different parts of the world, and we have a great perspective on everything from diet to health to politics, to Mideast struggles, to these eternal wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and around the world, and, of course, the Zionist problem on the threats of globalism. And right now we're dealing with one of the biggest issues, I think, that's confronting the world as globalism advances and the Zionists continue their power over the world. They are working hard to suppress freedom of thought and freedom of speech and press. And we here know, and just about everybody in the world knows, that there were massive and terrible crimes committed against many Jewish civilians in the Second World War. Terrible things did occur. No one's here denying that, and no one's trying to say that that the crimes didn't occur. But it's interesting, ladies and gentlemen, that we have just a total perspective that you don't have freedom of speech on a historical event. You can question any historical event on Earth except this historical event. You can question anything. As Ahmadinejad said once, you can question the existence of God, but you can't question the existence of the Holocaust as they write it. I don't particularly do that myself, but I know that men who have questioned certain aspects of the Holocaust story, they've suffered terrible persecution, and this is wrong, and this is against every principle of freedom of speech and thought and value. And how do we know the truth about any subject, ladies and gentlemen, ultimately, unless we allow freedom of inquiry and speech and thought? And the idea of kidnapping a man from his family, his home, putting him in prison for years for simply honestly presenting his point of view and doing it on a rational and decent level is certainly a great human rights violation. It's a great crime. Those are the true criminals in our society, and that's why I'm happy to have this man on, no matter whether you agree with him or you don't agree with some of his original conclusions. The important thing is that he's a man of honor, and he should be respected for that. I can respect a man of any political opinion and any historical opinion who stands up for himself and expresses himself in a literate and intelligent and decent way, as certainly that he's done. Mr. Rudolph, let's go forward. So your first bout in the prisons was 14 months. Then what happened?
Well, I was involved in a number of research projects and book projects at that time about the same topic, and they all ended up with criminal prosecutions and investigations. So a couple of years down the line, I had a whole plethora of criminal investigations pending against me. I had house searches all over the place. No matter where I tried to get an article or a book published, the publisher was certain to get a house search and confiscation. So the whole thing turned into a complete nightmare. I couldn't breathe in Germany anymore, and I left the country before I actually had to serve the 14 months because there were, as I said, so many more cases pending against me. I lived abroad then for a while until, as a matter of fact, in England, until the media found out that I am in the country, and then I made kind of a media witch hunt against me. That was toward the end of 99. At that time, my first wife had become sick of living underground in England, which I basically had done. And she had left me, so my first family with the two small children was the first major victim of that permanent stress of having to hide and of having to fear arrest and house searches. And then when in England hell broke loose, I left that country, came to America in late 99, and in 2000 I actually applied for political asylum in the United States, which was doomed as well as I already thought it would be, because I always say myself, America waged two world wars against Germany so that Germany would do exactly what it does now, it self-destroys. So my research would kind of, if proven correct, would give Germany back its self-confidence and a will to survive. But of course, how could I hope that the United States would help me in that? Anyway, eventually, the case was rejected in the United States, but by that time I had married a U.S. citizen, my second marriage, and I had filed an application to become a permanent resident. Because of that marriage, the marriage was acknowledged as genuine, and according to the law, they should have given me a right to adjust my status as a permanent legal resident. But the administration on that day, when we actually got our marriage confirmed and our marriage license, the immigration license, they arrested me within the presence of my wife and our 7-month-old baby, and a couple of weeks later deported me. We made an emergency motion to the federal court involved, as well as to the Supreme Court, because my asylum case had not yet been adjudicated by a federal court, only by the administration. So we had filed an appeal to the federal court. The case was pending. And while it was pending, I got arrested and deported. And the federal court denied our motion to have the deportation stayed, and the Supreme Court didn't take the case. So, as you know, there is a Fifth Amendment, part of which says that everybody has a right to due process who is present in the territory of the United States, no matter whether a citizen, whether it's a legal or an illegal person present in the country, they have a right to be heard. And that was, of course, not followed in my case. I was just dumped back to Germany. And a few months later, actually, the federal court adjudicating my asylum case, they did reject the asylum case, but they said I should have had the right to adjust my status to permanent resident in the country due to my marriage. Of course, by then, that was pointless because I was out of the country, and it would be a hard struggle for me, I knew that then, to get back into the country. In Germany, I got arrested. I had to serve for the 14 months that I had run away from, so to say. The old cases, 5 or 6 pending cases that had accumulated while I was still in Germany, had gone cold. They had expired by then, so they couldn't try me for that. But in the meantime, in the years between 96, that's when I had left Germany, and 2005, that's when I was deported back, so 9 years, I had done quite some publishing activities. While in the UK and in the US, I had published some 20, 25 books, 2 magazines I had put out. I had started major website projects. And even though those activities had been completely legal, both in the UK as well as in the United States, the Germans then prosecuted me for those activities because they say, as soon as it's available over the internet and you can get it in Germany, the crime, and somebody downloads it in Germany, reads it in Germany, it's a crime committed in Germany. So I got indicted for, when my arrest warrant was for 25 cases each, punishable with up to 5 years. 25 times 5 is what?
125.
125. And, well, for the indictment, the prosecution had to get all the evidence together, so they restricted themselves, I think, to 9 cases with a maximum sentence of 5, so we're still up to 45 years.
Yeah.
And then I made turned the trial into a lecture hall, talking about freedom of speech, about science, about scientific standards, about society's obligation and duty to guarantee the right of free speech, of free science, scientific inquiry, and so forth, and then how this is being violated in Germany. I went into theory of resistance, why everybody is obligated to resist a government that violates civil rights. And after that 7-day lecture, actually, the court knew they're going to run out of time. I can drag this on endlessly. Yeah. They want to put me in prison for years to come. I am going to keep them in court for years to come. So they were willing to make a compromise. And up to then, only 2 cases had been heard. So I got sentenced for 2 cases, a total of 30 months plus the 14. So I had to serve 44 months all in all, which was over in summer.
Oh, they were really lenient with you. They put you in prison for 44 months for having an academic opinion expressed in a nonviolent and decent manner. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in a few moments after these words with Gammer Rudolph, a great man of honor who stood up for what he believed. Whether you agreed with him or not, he's certainly, one thing you got to say for him, he's got great courage and great honor. And we're glad to have him with us. Be back in a moment. This is David Duke again. I was wondering if you have seen yet my videos and documentaries. On my particular channel, I now have 4.5 million views. It's pretty amazing. But even more amazing is that hundreds of people have taken it upon their own initiative to take my lectures, my debates, my appearances, my broadcasts, and make videos out of them, independent videos. And now there are over 6,000 videos of my appearances and my work, well over 250 million views worldwide and growing. My videos have an average of over 90% positive ratings. Please go to my website, davidduke.com, and check out my videos, subscribe, and please tell your friends and relatives about this program. You and I together can change the world.
Remember this name, Carnivora. That's carnivora.com. What if I told you that this 100% pure and natural product was delivered directly to the White House at President Reagan's personal request at a time when only the president was able to obtain it? Reagan used this amazing product, Carnivora, successfully, a product derived only from nature that has the intelligence to instinctively attack abnormal cells only without harming a single normal cell, and the power to actually wake up critical immune cells from dormancy to attack foreign invaders that don't belong in our bodies. Carnivora is now obtainable by anyone who wants to get healthy and stay that way. Call 1-866-VENUS-FLY and protect yourself with 17 naturally occurring compounds that will unleash powerful immune defense. That's 1-866-VENUS-FLY. Call 1-866-VENUS-FLY and get your Carnivora today. Visit carnivora.com.
Hello, this is David Duke. I want to give you a free gift of an audio edition of my worldwide bestseller, My Awakening. This book is about awakening to the real world, exposing the lies of the Zionist-controlled media. Now, putting my 740-page book into audio was a huge task. It's the length of at least 10 typical audio books. But I promise it will keep you on the edge of your seat, and it's like a college education on these issues. To download the book completely free, you must use a file share program like uTorrent. Details are on my website. Or you can order the book on a DVD data disc for $20. I also have a beautiful hardback edition available at $35, the same price as Amazon, but ordering from my office helps us more, and you may value the fact that I personally autograph each copy. I guarantee that after you finish this book, you will never again see the world in the same way.
There must be something worth living for. There must be something worth trying for. Even something's worth dying for. And if one man can stand tall, there must be hope for us all.
Okay, folks, here we are, David Duke and Gemma Rudolph, and we're trying to find a way to restore the light that we have lost, and one light that has been a shining light in the Western world, and including the United States of America, has been the light of freedom of thought and speech and conscience, that people shouldn't be prosecuted, they shouldn't be imprisoned for expressing their opinion. And as you see, I want you to understand this. I hope every listener really understands this, that this man is an academic. He was simply writing historical and scientific papers concerning an issue, investigating an historical phenomenon which had passed by many decades. And for simply researching this area and just letting the chips fall where they may, as far as he's concerned, again, there was no proof that he falsified any data or forged any data. In fact, the opposite's true. They wouldn't even dare take up the matter of whether it was accurate or not. He was basically kidnapped and put into prison for 44 months. And, of course, the tremendous struggle and the threat of maybe even having you know, many, many, many decades behind bars and the destruction of your life. Gemmer Rudolph didn't do these things because of any economic interest. He did these things simply because he was devoted to what he saw as the truth. Gemmer, honestly, now doing this, going through this, it must have really, and my struggles, as you know, I've had my own struggles for freedom. I've been locked up in a number of cases. I was locked up not long ago, of course, in Cologne and many other places, Prague, when I was going to give a speech at the oldest university, one of the oldest in the world, Charles University, which was founded on freedom of speech. And over the years, undergoing these kinds of repressions, you've probably really gotten a tremendous understanding and appreciation of the value and really the human right of freedom of speech and conscience and how precious and important this right is. Could you talk to us, our audience, about that and some of your feelings about that and explain to them your motivations now and how you want to fight to increase freedom of speech around the world?
Sure. As a matter of fact, my own motivations have changed over the years. When I started this whole thing, I had some political motivations, I would just say patriotic as a German, because I felt like this is something that affects us Germans, and it should be very interesting to find out whether or not it's true. And if it's not true or not completely true, as we are being told, then it would be a tremendous relief for us Germans. So that motivation was initially there, but it fainted over time simply because I have lived abroad. I've lived in England, in Spain, in Mexico, in Panama, in the United States. I was thrown all over the place, and that has turned me a little bit more into a cosmopolitan. And as a result, this aspect of my motivation has not completely gone away, but it has faded and is now more in the background. Free speech has become more and more dominant. As I see it today, there is a lot of lip service in the West going on about free speech. You mentioned China, and this is a very interesting point. Because I early on mentioned that a lawyer is sitting in prison in Germany for similar offenses. As a matter of fact, there was this international book exhibition a while ago, a couple of years ago in Germany, where it was about China. Every year they have a different country where they focus on, and this year it was about China. And this one Chinese dissident who had been incarcerated in China for having written a book, and he was in prison for 11 years. Now, in Germany, we have this lawyer. He hasn't even written a book. He is sent around with hand-printed, hand-copied his thesis about historical and political aspects, very academic on when you look at the writings, even though it has some polemics in it, too. And he, all in all, received 12 years in prison for that. So you can assume that the distribution of his material was not as far as the distribution of a published book in China, but still he got 12 years. So that shows you on which level we are talking.
Yeah, I want to say something about that before we go from the China, before we lose the point here. I have a guest on my program quite frequently by the name of Gary John, who's a Westerner and who's a New Zealander, actually, who's been living in China, fluent in Chinese, very familiar with the issue, and he tells me very clearly, and he shows me the reasons. He said that China, he says, actually there's much more freedom of speech in China in terms of historical matters and other contentious matters, he said, than there is in Europe in terms of the matters that you were discussing and other people are discussing today. And he shows why. He said most of the actual problems that you've had there have been basically political and revolting, revolutionary movements and this kind of thing. Whereas what's happening in Europe basically is you have, you don't even have the right of an academic to explore an issue from a purely academic or a structural or historical aspect. And so I've learned I actually respect the Chinese a lot more now. And it's one more case of the media pointing their fingers at other people and the Western media and the Western governments, while they are really more guilty of repression than the nations they point their fingers at. So go ahead.
Yes. Well, just a couple of days ago, I updated my the statistical data that I've been collecting over the years on persecution in Germany. And I have one that is censorship in Germany. The German authorities, every year, they publish the statistics of crimes committed by what they consider to be politically motivated people.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is that they categorize it in three areas. There's foreigners that summarize basically, for the most part, Muslim extremists or some nationalist struggle that immigrants bring into the country from their own countries. Then they have the left-wingers and the right-wingers, right-wing extremism and left-wing extremism. There is only for the right-wing extremist a special kind of offense that left-wingers or anyone else cannot commit, and these are propaganda offenses and stirring up the people, which is a special case of propaganda offense. So if you say something that is considered inflammatory. So these are dedicated free speech offenses, which can be committed only by people with right-wing views. That is anyone who is patriotic, nationalistic, or up to national socialist. Mm-hmm. And I have collected data since 1994 up to this year, and so far almost 200,000 cases of criminal persecutions against people in Germany have been started for these free speech offenses. Now, if we take the left-wingers and the foreigners altogether, we are almost up to 250,000 cases of criminal prosecutions.
250,000?
Yes.
Repeat that again for our audience. Just say that again. I hope it sinks in, ladies and gentlemen. How many cases of political persecution for political ideas? The government, we're not talking about violence here. We're not talking about any sort of even calling for an armed revolution, nothing of it. We're talking about people being prosecuted simply for having the wrong political opinions or symbols or whatever of that nature. How many prosecutions?
Between 1994 and 2010, 218,167. So I do not have the data for 2011. They are supposed to be published in a couple of weeks. And I don't have any data from the years before 94.
218,000 people published, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, China has a lot more people, you know, than Germany does. I think that's a lot more people, you know,
yeah,
prosecuted for those bases than even the state and a nation of 1.4 billion people of China.
Yeah. It would probably amount to 2 million people prosecution they have to start in China to get to the same percentage. And I don't know if they have so many. I doubt it.
No, I'm going to talk to Gary about that. Go ahead.
We're talking about initiated criminal investigations that they do not all lead to prosecutions. They do not all lead to – there's my therapy. They do not all lead to people being sentenced. So we need to distinguish between those things. But they are acts that the government considers to be crimes. So if somebody smears some slogan against some identifiable minority on a wall, that is a criminal investigation. They may never catch the guy, probably will not in most cases, but that's what they
and criminal investigations of any sort can lead to people being, if they do know some sort of investigation, something you write or speak or communicate or email, that can lead to loss of jobs or many other types of persecution as well.
That's social persecution that comes on top of it, and that would be probably a far bigger number.
It's really unbelievable. But let me ask you a question. Are people beginning to are these persecutions working, or are people to a great extent waking up to this oppression? And I hope, and from what I hear around the world, is it's kind of growing, and even the parties that oppose the system seem to be growing in Germany and elsewhere around Europe.
They have a protest party, the Pirates, right now. They just had their National Assembly, and of the 1,400 people gathered there, 1,399 voted for keeping dissenting opinions illegal in Germany. So they voted for suppression of free speech on any issue that the powers that be don't want to be discussed.
Well, you see, they're always trying to control the opposition. But at least we have programs like this.
So,
website? We're almost out of time. Give me your website. We'll do this program again, and I want to get your opinions on all sorts of world events, globalist activities, the Israeli policy, the wars, banking and many other issues. You have a very eclectic mind and you go into many different areas. We will do a show again. But give us your website so people can get in touch with you, sir.
GermarRudolph.com. GermarRudolph.com. Like my name.
Okay, Germar, thank you so much. And ladies and gentlemen, do give him a send him an email and let him know what you think of him, and at least give him a hell of a commendation for his courage and his honor for standing up, we believe, to be true and honest, and for his fight for freedom of speech and for real human rights on the earth. Until tomorrow, and we're going to have another great guest tomorrow. This has been David Duke. Please keep on thinking free.
There must be more to life. There has to be a way that we can restore to life the light that we have lost.
This is David Duke again. I was wondering if you have seen yet my videos and documentaries. On my particular channel, I now have 4.5 million views. It's pretty amazing. But even more amazing is that hundreds of people have taken it upon their own initiative to take my lectures, my debates, my appearances, my broadcasts, and make videos out of them, independent videos. And now there are over 6,000 videos of my appearances and my work. Well over 250 million views worldwide and growing. My videos have an average of over 90% positive ratings. Please go to my website, davidduke.com, and check out my videos, subscribe, and please tell your friends and relatives about this program. You and I together can change the world.
When it comes to silver and gold investing, you have to go with somebody you trust, somebody who understands financial planning, economics, and history. In the late 1990s, Paul Drockton predicted that gold and silver would be the number one growth investment opportunity of the future, and he was right on the mark. Paul began helping his clients and friends make the conversion, and instead of losing money, they have all realized returns as high as 300%. Paul Drockton is now forecasting massive returns on gold and silver bullion in the coming months. Paul's foresight and vision were 2020, and his track record is perfect. You can email him at pdrockton@aol.com. That's Drockton, D-R-O-C-K-T-O-N. And let Paul help you. There is still time. So email Paul for a completely free, no-strings consultation at pdrockton@aol.com.